so glad you're here. I'm Julie Ballou, and this is Rape the Podcast. In this podcast, we discuss rape and sexual assault as indicated by the title. We discuss situations and experiences that might trigger anxiety, so please be mindful as you are listening. You can reach out to RAIN.org, that's RAIN with two N's, or call 1-800-656-HOPE if you need resources or someone to talk to. This week, well, I'm a week late getting this episode out. It happens. But this week, I finally scored an interview with Me Too Springfield, whom I really wanted to talk to in the first season. They really have to be credited with lighting a fire under our city's asses to do more for sexual assault victim survivors. If you remember, they submitted some great questions for them to respond to after the CNN article came out about our trashed rape kits. Those questions did not hide their frustration and disappointment for the victims whose cases were never properly investigated and whose rape kits were destroyed. They were afraid the report exposed Springfield police practices that would make victims distrustful and even more hesitant to report assaults. Originally, they had asked for permission to record a meeting with the police, which was denied. They also denied local media from sitting in on a discussion because they said the city didn't feel comfortable that they could have an open dialogue with the media in the room. So the questions were submitted on paper and answered on paper. To be honest, I didn't realize we had a Me Too in Springfield until this all came out, but the fact that they made the city uncomfortable is a great sign of progress, right? And even though there's been some staff changes, this organization has made a huge difference in our community. I'm speaking with Cassidy Mazurkiewicz, who is the president and treasurer of Me Too Springfield. I really appreciate you joining me. I feel like it's been a long road probably for you as well, just to get to where we are at this point in time in our community. And I can't wait to hear how things are going after the Me Too movement sprung up in Springfield. It was a surprise to me that we had like a chapter, or I don't know if that's what it's called. But so what's the history there of Me Too and how it got started in Springfield?
Originally, the president was Jordan Harris. She started it due to her own experience. And so she and two of her friends, Sarah Bargo and Kelsey Nichols, joined together. And so they got the whole process rolling here. And they just thought that we needed something. We didn't have anything specific. We have the Victim Center and Harmony House that help with people with trauma, but we wanted something more specific to sexual assault survivors.
Your experience, I saw a video that you did with one of the high schools that was on the website. So do you want to talk a little bit about how your experience compelled you to join the Me Too movement?
Absolutely. So in 2018, I was assaulted. And after that, it was just really lonely. Like, I didn't know what to do or where to go. And one of my other friends who had been assaulted was already a part of Me Too. And she was like, you should come to one of the open sharing spaces and just like, come talk, like it would be really good for you. So I went, and then I just never stopped going. I just started going to like all their events and started volunteering. The fall of 2019, they asked if I wanted to be on the board. And so I was like, absolutely, I would love that. And so I started off with, I think I was in fundraising first, and then I moved to community outreach. So I was helping like plan the events and stuff. And then in January of 2021, the president at the time, Jordan, moved to Arizona and asked if I wanted to take over. And I was like, heck yeah, I do.
But gosh, why? What an incredible, I mean, first of all, how old are you? This is such a huge load of responsibility, don't you think?
It really was. When I was assaulted, I was only 18. So I turned 22 this year. So I'm super young, and it was a really incredible opportunity.
For sure. And so are you like able to maybe heal yourself through this work?
Yes, absolutely. So I think it's a little bit of everything. Sometimes it can still be a little traumatizing, a little triggering to hear people's stories. But overall, being able to like hear and talk to people who've been through something similar or even something completely different is really like healing to the soul that although it sucks that this is how it brings us together, that there are people we can chat with and connect that will understand us and try to understand us.
Yeah. You guys provide an awful lot of education to our community, which I'm so grateful for. I think I went to one of your programs at the library a few years ago. There was just a lot of different classes on topics. And so I'm just going to throw a few topics out there. And I'm wondering what, and we could do a whole podcast episode on each one of these. So just if you could give me an idea of what do you teach people about consent? And maybe does it depend on how old they are? How do you approach that with younger kids?
So we have two consent classes and one is just like basic consent. We talk about how to get consent. A lot of people, especially when we teach to like college kids, they seem to be like, how do you ask that in a sexy way that it like doesn't ruin the mood? And we have to go into like how you can bring that up and it's not weird and make people realize that it's just a part of things. And we don't have to make it like a whole thing. Getting consent is not like stopping somebody and being like, wait, is this okay?
There's
like,
no documentation or papers to sign.
Yes. Like you just, and you have consent when you have it, like it should be excited and enthusiastic. And then we also have our kids in consent class and that's more for a parent's class. It's talking about how we can get consent from our kids for like everything as far as like tickling or just making sure that we're always like communicated with our kids and understanding that consent goes so much deeper than just sex and like making sure the people around us are comfortable and that we're always present in what we're doing and what we're saying with other people.
And I'm sure part of that might be to help kids know when they need to tell an adult that they've been touched or something else is going on.
The verbiage, it used to be so normal for people to call penis and vagina pet names, like their junk or their private parts and stuff. And it's really important to use the correct words because they're not dirty words. And so getting parents comfortable with the fact that it is okay to say those things.
Wow, that's important. I hadn't thought of it that way, that the words are important. How do you suggest we react to a person that we love who has just been sexually assaulted? What's the best way to react?
First and foremost, I think it's always best to start saying, I believe you. I think that when somebody comes to you to tell you that they've been assaulted, they don't know how you're going to react and they're scared and nervous already. So the first and best thing you could do is take that weight off their back and tell them you believe them. Be there for them. Ask what they need. If it just happened, if they're needing somebody to take them to the hospital, if that's what they're wanting, or if they just need resources, like if they're just needing a shoulder to cry on, ask questions, but never in a way that's accusing. Like you just want to be, I believe you. What can I do for you? What do you need? Do you just need me to listen to you? Or do we need to find you a counselor? Like, what will help? I think that's always your best place to start.
Yeah, I like that part about just believing them. I think that's the biggest problem is we think we're not going to be believed.
All the time we're not. Even family members can be the person that's like, really? And it's just important. You're not the police. It's not your job to decide if they're telling the truth or not. Just be there for them.
That's good. I just talked with Dawn Day, who's a SANE nurse at Mercy, and we talked a lot about the rape kit examination. It is so hard after a traumatic experience like rape, then to gather your courage together to go and get an exam. And so what advice do you have for those victims who are like, gosh, I need a shower. I need to get this off of me. Depends on the situation a lot, but is there any advice that you have for going to get that rape kit?
Absolutely. If you're going to get a rape kit, there's nothing fun about it. You were just assaulted, and then now you're going to the hospital to be violated and lay naked on a table. That's not fun. The biggest thing to remember is just that you can have somebody there with you. You could bring a friend. You can when the same nurse comes, they will call an advocate. You can call the victim center. They have 24/7 advocates. And then Me Too Springfield can also send an advocate to come sit with you at the hospital. You don't have to be alone. It does suck that you have to wait and shower, wait to pee, all of that stuff. It's terrible. And I won't pretend it's not terrible, but the best thing you can do in order to get justice is make sure you have as much evidence as possible. So if you can just hold out and get a resource, an advocate or a friend to be there to hold your hand until you can make it through, then as soon as you leave, you're free to go sleep for 12 hours and mm-hmm. take a shower.
Scrub, scrub, scrub.
Yes.
Well, what have you heard about the people who you're going to come into contact with after you've been assaulted? The police, the SANE nurse, the advocates, and specifically Springfield. Do you feel like they are on our side?
Half and half. So like the advocates are, I have not met a mean advocate with the victim center, or obviously I wouldn't have anybody on my team that I didn't feel was a good advocate. I wholeheartedly believe in them. I think SANE nurses don't get paid enough, and it is completely volunteer to be there. I absolutely think they're on our side. I think the police is hit or miss. I think that you can get lucky and get a police officer in there who just wants to be there for you. And then you can get a police officer in there who couldn't care less that he was there. In my experience, I had a police officer who acted like he could not care less what happened to me, and that it must have been my fault, and just couldn't wait to get out. He was obviously uncomfortable from the moment he got there. He victim blamed me at one point. And so it might be, I don't really think it's biased, because I've heard a lot of similar stories from what happened to me that also happened to a ton of other people mm-hmm. with interactions with the police.
Recently too?
Because yeah, I mean,
their story is that they're being trauma informed as we speak, that they are still in a learning process, I guess, but they're working on it too. That's what I'm hoping to hear eventually, is that we don't ever have those problems.
Yes. We've worked with the police a little bit. They used to take you when you would go in to give your statement. They would take you into like an interrogation room, like one of the like brick rooms with like a silver metal table that you sit
at. Spotlight on your face.
Yes, and like feel like you're in an episode of SVU. Mm-hmm. It's horrifying. There's always been comfy rooms for like children. We were like, stop taking victims to the interrogation room. Like you have these rooms with couches. Mm-hmm. And so to our knowledge, they do put people in the soft, like nice rooms to get their statements now to help them. I feel like that's a big change. I think detectives are much better now. I think that hopefully with this trauma information training, that will really help set this all up a lot better. I think after the scandal with throwing out the rape kits in 2017 or 2018, they've worked a lot harder, because that was pretty embarrassing for them. They yeah. were blasted virally across the United States. So that's when we're trying, but
I know we have a long ways to go, but we are working on it. It is safe to go to the police. And yes. I don't feel 100% comfortable saying that yet. I feel like there's still a chance that it may not be safe to go yeah. and report it. So that's why it's so important to go get that rape kit. And then if totally. You can report it later on, do you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We still have a long way to go with the law, I feel like, because even when the officers come in and they're great and they're nice and trauma-informed, it is so hard to prove rape. Like I have a friend currently. Her rape went viral after the prosecutor here dropped it in 2020, because she was like, he admitted to it on tape and they still dropped the case. And she was like, this is ridiculous. So she posted on Facebook, went viral. Suddenly the next day, the prosecutor was like, we never dropped it. She's lying. We're going to look into it again. So they never dropped it, reopened it, whatever. She's never heard back since then. They've never called her.
Never like, called her.
Not even a checkup. Like, we knew they sent it back to the police, and the detective went through and had to like get extra details, basically like called her to ask like what flavor drink she had that night and stuff. Like they needed like weird details. And then he sent it back to the prosecutor and nothing since then.
So maybe it's the communication is still just a really big problem, because I hear that a lot. The DA has never called me back and I don't know what's going on. And I know things are taking a while these days because of COVID.
Yeah, COVID. And then everybody's busy and we totally get that. I think it's a hard line to draw of like, are they busy and want to help me and they just can't make that call, or just do they not care? Because I think it's just hard when you're a victim, like waiting for that call and never getting it.
Yeah. Well, I know Me Too did an awesome job of standing up to the police after that whole rape kit story came out. And I don't know if how much of the confrontation you got to have a front row seat for. Just how hard is that to stand up to the police and demand justice and demand action? And you, I mean, that's what Me Too Springfield does, is we demand that there's a better response.
Yes, agreed. When all of that happened, obviously Jordan was the president at the time and it definitely was hard. She did an interview with CNN and had to talk about everything. And it was a lot on her, and she killed it. Just continued to stand up and talk about exactly what needed to be done, and stuff got done, and it was awesome.
Yeah, no, she did a great job. All of you really have. So I really appreciate what you guys do in Springfield. I heard a rumor, and this is a part we can take out if I need to, but I have to ask about it. I heard a rumor that somewhere online, there is a list of sexual predators, abusers, and that I don't know if Me Too was in charge of it, but that somewhere on social media, there's like a spreadsheet of community members keeping track of rapists. Have you heard anything about that?
I have not heard of that at all.
Darn. I was hoping you had.
We have the Me Too Springfield group. That's a private group, and people will post their abusers or their rapists in there. Mm-hmm. It's not a spreadsheet, so it's definitely not the same thing you're talking about, but you get a ton of people. I don't know if you're in that group, but a ton of people will post like, this guy never got arrested. They never did anything for me, but he's a creep. Beware. Like kind of.
And do you advise people to do that, to post about their abusers on social media?
It's hit and miss. So with Me Too Springfield, we used to post things for people and we realized really quickly that is a great way to get a lawsuit, and we cannot do that. We can't do it with the Me Too Springfield name anymore, but we have the group for people who are, it's all consenting adults to say, I'm in this group, I can handle these stories and I want to hear about it. So anybody who joins the group knows that they might see something triggering. But as far as people talking about what happened to them, I absolutely believe in that. When the justice system is not really on our side yet, and hopefully one day it is, you have to take matters into your own hands. And it's not fair for a victim to have to shut up and keep quiet because their rapist didn't get convicted. Yeah. Because a lot of times most of the time not being convicted means nothing. Like, it doesn't mean they didn't do it. It just means that the law wasn't on our side, because most of the time, unless you were in broad daylight with 15 witnesses, they just don't prosecute rapes the way they should.
Yeah. No, and it seems like another way to get justice, to put their name and their face out there with this act and embarrass them and let, well, I mean, in some respects, it's a way to protect this person's children and family members that might be.
Absolutely. People who know them and didn't know it happened, putting them on blast gets them fired from their jobs. And I love it. I appreciate it. I think it's awesome that you lack control in the situation of what happened to you, and to finally be able to put it out there and take control back over the situation and stop letting them get to live their life with no consequences. I think that's awesome.
And I hate asking this question because I believe people, I believe them, but there are people out there who say that they're making it up just to win a custody battle or because they have an axe to grind. Does that happen? Do you see that ever? I've never seen it. I've never seen a made up story.
I have not had one personally with Me Too Springfield. Sure. Of course. I think the statistic is like 2-8%.
Just such a huge gap.
I know, it's like they can't get the number down. But included in that percentage is people who either dropped their case or they went and the person was found not guilty, even if we're guilty. Like, you can't, they just like didn't have enough evidence to prove that they were guilty. So the number is really small. I would be willing to bet it's closer to realistically the 2%. Obviously, there's always going to be people that are out there that with bad intentions or are pathological liars or something. But most of the time, that is not the case. With me too, we get questions all the time, like, how do you know if somebody's lying or not? And I always just redirect, it is not my job to decide if they're lying or not. It is my job to advocate for them. I will take them to the police. I'm not making up evidence or anything. I'm not going to help a person convict the rapist. I'm just there to support them. So nothing I do is getting somebody convicted.
Yeah. Well, there has been a lot of work done because of that report that came from CNN about the rape kits. We had a Springfield City Council sexual assault task force. Yes. They made some recommendations. And from what I understand, there's a group that meets monthly as a sexual assault response team. I don't know if you guys are a part of that at all, but do you see anything happening as a result of all of that? Have things improved? Is there areas where we can get involved and help make it happen faster?
So with the sexual assault task force, we were a little bumped. I will say we went and she is now stepped down. She was the secretary at the time. Sarah Bargo was on the task force. And we did feel that it was showy, that it was just to say, you know, we got called out. And so now we're doing this task force, but we're not really doing anything about it. People went up and Sarah went hard to try to get changes made. And it seemed like the police kept shutting them down, the changes that were being asked for. And like,
can you say what kind of changes?
So Sarah, I don't know exactly what she would be okay with me saying.
Sure. We don't want to get her in trouble.
Right. Exactly. Because I don't know what the stipulations for her being on the task force were.
Okay.
But we thought more trauma-informed stuff. And it seemed as though the chief of police was hesitant. It felt like they weren't doing anything wrong. And it does seem like he's changed a little bit in that aspect. I will give him that credit. It seems as though with his, like, he does like Facebook lives and stuff. Uh-huh. It seems as though he talks and puts that stuff out there that he wants it to change and wants things to get better. Last year, city council voted to use the rest of their funds to allocated their funds to stop the backlog. So we have finally caught up the backlog of rape kits. I think that's a huge improvement right off the bat.
Yeah.
I think all of that is so important. I definitely see changes. I do think the task force itself was more of a show of we have to do something now because we've been called out, unless it wasn't originally really intended to actually make a change. I do feel that good things started to come from it. The police do seem with the trauma for training and everything. I think that we're making changes. I just think that it's been really hit or miss. I think it's been a lot of stop and go.
In 2019, Me Too Springfield posted on social media that a judge in our town had a well-known reputation for giving lenient sentences to those convicted of sexual crimes, like when he sentenced Beau Gormley to probation after he was found guilty of rape for the second time in 3 years, which they called beyond unacceptable, and they started a petition to have this judge removed. In the next episode, I'll continue my discussion with Cassidy.
The law is so lenient with rapists and child abusers and stuff that I don't think we did end up finding that he technically did anything illegal. He just let these people off with the minimum sentences because he could. And that's a fault in the law. I feel like that's on him that he sentenced them so lightly, because why does he think those things are such light matters?
And I'll tell you more about that whole thing with Holden. Please rate and review this podcast to help the algorithm along to share this podcast with the people who need to hear it. Could be another victim survivor, or it could be a police officer or sane nurse or just a city council person who might find some motivation from listening to this podcast to do more. Thank you for joining me. I'm Julie Ballou, and this is Rape the Podcast.